I didn't sign anything. That's the part I keep returning to, even now, even as she waits for my answer with that practiced stillness she uses when she's already decided the outcome. The email is open on my screen. Her name sits in the sender line like a credential, not a request, not an order, just a reminder of what she's already shown me. You understand how this works now, she'd said earlier, gently, as if explaining a process I'd eventually be grateful for. I wouldn't put you in this position if I didn't trust you. The document attached is clean, policy language, a sequence of steps, no slurs, no threats, no explicit harm, just a procedure that ends with someone losing access they can't afford to lose, someone junior, someone inconvenient, someone who asked the wrong question too loudly. My role is small. Confirm a timeline. Reframe an incident. Phrase it so it aligns. She never asked me to lie. She just asks me to be precise. I hover over the keyboard, aware of how quiet the office feels at this hour, aware that whatever I type will become part of a record that outlives both of us. I tell myself this is how institutions protect themselves. That she's teaching me something valuable. That this is what mentorship looks like when it's real. I type anyway. She started calling it guidance before I realized she'd stopped calling it advice. At first, it felt flattering, being looped into conversations that weren't meant for my level, being asked what I thought, then watching her nod as if my answer had confirmed something she already knew. She never corrected me outright. She refined. She adjusted. She'd say things like, "You're close," or, "That's the instinct, yes," and I learned quickly how to shape my thinking so it landed nearer to where she wanted it. That's how she framed it. Shaping. She talked a lot about standards, about how fragile credibility was, about how people confuse intention with impact and expect institutions to absorb the mess. When she spoke, she never sounded angry. She sounded tired, reasonable, like someone who had already seen the worst outcomes and was trying to spare me the same education. "You don't want to be replaceable," she told me once, smiling. "You want to be reliable." Reliable meant noticing patterns before others named them. It meant documenting irregularities early, while they were still manageable. It meant understanding which voices carried weight and which ones created risk just by speaking. When the issue came up, when she forwarded me the complaint and asked for my perspective, I didn't feel alarmed. I felt chosen. She didn't say, "Help me handle this." She said, "I want you to see how these things are handled." The language was careful, always process-oriented, always about protection, never about punishment. By the time I realized the outcome was already implied, I was halfway through justifying it to myself, telling myself that neutrality wasn't possible, that silence would still be a form of consent, just a less useful one. When she thanked me afterward, she used the word professional. That was when the feeling shifted. Not guilt, exactly. Something colder. The awareness that I hadn't been guided through a decision. I'd been positioned inside it. That my usefulness hadn't come from insight, but from alignment. I didn't learn anything about leadership that day. I learned how easily respect can be used to launder damage. She stopped explaining after that. Not abruptly, just incrementally. Fewer context-setting sentences. More assumptions built into her tone. When she spoke to me now, it was with the confidence of someone who expected agreement before I'd had time to form an opinion. I noticed how often she used "we" when the decisions were already made, how rarely she named consequences out loud. "We'll need to be consistent," she said, sliding another document across my desk. "We can't afford ambiguity here." Consistency meant using the same language we'd used before. It meant citing precedent that I'd helped establish without realizing it would become one. Each small contribution I'd made now appeared footnoted in her logic. Proof that this approach was sound, tested, defensible. That's when I understood the trap wasn't obedience. It was continuity. If I hesitated now, I wouldn't just be disagreeing with her. I'd be contradicting myself. Undermining the judgment she'd already praised. Exposing the fact that my earlier certainty had been provisional. Borrowed, situational. She never reminded me of that directly. She didn't have to. She'd pause when I went quiet. Let the silence stretch just long enough to feel instructional. I could hear the subtext in it. You know this already. Don't make me walk you backward. The next case was easier. That frightened me. I recognized the pattern immediately. The way a question was framed. The way a meeting note could be read two different ways depending on who summarized it. She asked me to draft the first pass, saying it would be good practice. When I handed it back, she made only minor edits. Cosmetic. Tone adjustments. Nothing that altered the outcome.
You're learning fast, she said. What I was learning was where to place emphasis, what details to elevate and which to let dissolve into procedural noise, how to make a decision feel inevitable by removing the language of choice.
I told myself this was maturity, that discomfort was part of growth, that moral clarity was a luxury people at our level couldn't afford. I told myself that if I didn't do it, someone else would, and they might do it sloppily, without the care I brought to it.
That was the logic that finally settled in my chest, heavy and convincing. I wasn't causing harm.
I was preventing chaos. And by the time the next name landed in my inbox, I no longer needed her to ask. The language started coming out of my mouth without rehearsal. That was the moment I noticed, the meeting where she wasn't present, where her chair sat empty and no one mentioned it. The room turned to me naturally, as if I were the logical extension of her absence. I heard myself say process and alignment and risk exposure, with the same cadence she used, pausing in the same places, letting the same words do the work of narrowing options. No one challenged me. That unsettled me more than resistance would have. Afterward, she sent a brief message. Handled well, nothing else. No praise, no elaboration, just confirmation that I'd performed the function correctly. I didn't reply. I didn't need to. The exchange was already complete. The next request wasn't framed as training at all. It arrived as an assumption, a task embedded inside a longer chain of decisions that had already moved past debate. I was asked to verify a detail I knew would tilt the outcome. I told myself accuracy mattered, that facts were neutral, even when they were selectively applied. When I flagged the discrepancy, she didn't correct me. She thanked me. That was when I realized the mentorship had ended without announcement. There was no longer a lesson attached to the action. No developmental framing, just expectation. I wasn't being shaped anymore. I was being used to stabilize something she no longer needed to oversee personally.
Replaceable people ask questions.
Reliable ones anticipate. I watched how others interacted with me now. The careful phrasing, the slight recalibration of tone. They'd learned where I sat in the structure without being told. I'd become a quiet reference point, someone whose interpretation carried weight because it sounded measured and came wrapped in institutional language. I told myself this was influence. Then I saw the email, the one she hadn't sent to me by mistake, the one I was copied on deliberately. The justification referenced my earlier assessments, my wording, my conclusions, not as input, as foundation. If challenged, the responsibility would diffuse backward, spread across time, anchored to moments when I believed I was only assisting. She didn't need to direct me anymore. The system recognized me as aligned. I closed the message and sat there longer than necessary, aware that I could still step out, that I could name the pattern, that I could claim misunderstanding. One might, with the other, steeping blue, white, squeezed, black, patched, beaten. But I also understood what that would cost. The credibility she'd helped me build. The position I now occupied. The quiet authority I'd been allowed to borrow and then keep. I stayed where I was. Not because she asked me to. Because by then, the damage no longer needed instruction.